The Antwerp Diamond District, also known as the Diamond Quarter and dubbed the Square Mile, is an area within the city of Antwerp, Belgium, which has focused on the diamond trade since the 15th century. About 84% of the world's rough diamonds pass through this district, making it the largest diamond district in the world with a turnover of $54 billion. Each year, approximately 50% of the rough diamonds return to Antwerp for cutting and polishing. Over $16 billion in polished diamonds pass through the district's exchanges each year. 380 workshops serve 1,500 companies. There are also 3,500 brokers, merchants, and diamond cutters. In 2017, roughly 234 million carats were traded in the district, an area with a workforce of 30,000 people. Over 80% of rough diamonds were purchased in Antwerp. With this amount of money and jewels going through the city, you can imagine the amount of security surrounding this part of town. In 2000, the Belgian government realized it would require a special type of cop to keep an eye on things and formed the Diamond Squad, the world's only specialized diamond police, with detectives Pies and De Brucker leading this team. The Diamond District is under 24-hour surveillance and is monitored by 63 cameras. The Antwerp World Diamond Center had its own private security force and a vault situated two floors beneath the main floor. The vault was equipped with multiple security mechanisms, including a lock with 100 million possible combinations, infrared heat detectors, a seismic sensor, a Doppler radar, and a magnetic field. Even with all of this added security, it did not stop thieves from breaking in and stealing diamonds, gold, silver, and other types of jewelry valued at more than $100 million. During the weekend of February 15th through the 16th, 2003, a robbery that is dubbed the heist of the century. Welcome to another episode of Crimson Sin with Tamsin Lee. I am your host, Tamsin Lee. Full show notes and sources can be found in the description. Most of the information I am sharing on this incident came from an article I found where the author actually interviewed the perpetrator. You can find a link directly to this article in today's show notes. On Sunday night, February 16th, 2003, in Belgium, Leonardo Notarbartolo drove his Peugeot down the E19 highway from Antwerp. His passenger, a man he knew as Speedy, was fidgeting and sweating as he kept an eye on the traffic in the rearview mirror. The pair had not slept for 2 days. Speedy had known Leonardo for 30 years. They had been childhood friends. But Leonardo knew Speedy tended to break down when it was time to end a job. The others in the team didn't want Speedy to do it. They thought he was a burden. Still, out of loyalty, he said Speedy can do it. They had everything under control. No alarms, no cops, no complications. The robbery wouldn't be discovered until Monday morning when the vault guards checked it out. The other members of the 5-man team were on their way back to Italy. They'd meet up outside Milan to divide up the gems. There was absolutely nothing to worry about. All that was left to do was burn the evidence, which was sitting in a trash bag in the back seat. He turned off the highway onto a dusty dirt road that wound through a thicket of trees. The place could not be seen from the road, though the lights of passing vehicles broke through the foliage. Leonardo scoped out the area. He thought the place looked abandoned. He burned the evidence near a shed next to a small pond and returned to the car. As he made it back to the car, he was shocked by what he saw. Speedy had completely lost control. Trash from the garbage bag was scattered all over the place, tangled in the trees. Speedy was angrily stomping around in the mud, throwing paper into the bushes. Videotape spools hung from the branches like decorations on a Christmas tree. Foreign currency from Israel and India flooded past a half-eaten sandwich. The mud near the car sparkled with tiny diamonds. It would take hours to clean up and dispose of everything. Then Speedy whispered, "I think someone's coming." Leonardo gave him a stern look. The forest was silent, except for the occasional sound of a passing car or truck on the nearby highway. Speedy was breathing rapidly, clearly in the midst of a panic attack. Leonardo commanded him to get back in the car. They needed to leave. No one would ever find the evidence here anyway. The robbery and destruction of evidence was then complete. The plans for the robbery started out about 18 months before they succeeded, as Leonardo Notarbartolo looked out the window of a cafe. He watched billions of dollars worth of diamonds passing by. During the day, people would carry them in briefcases and their pockets, while wearing fancy watches as they go from one office to another. At night, all those precious gems are locked away in safes and underground vaults. This area was one of the highest concentrations of wealth in the world. In 2000, Leonardo rented a small office in the Diamond Center and pretended to be a gem importer from Italy. He met with many dealers, buying small stones, paying in cash, dressing nicely, and trying to speak French. All the while, the dealers had no idea they just met one of the best jewel thieves in the world. Leonardo Notarbartolo was born in Sicily, Italy, and was a master thief who had been stealing since he was just a little kid. He loved the thrill of it all, but it wasn't just about the money for him. He was born to be a thief. His first robbery was in 1958, when he was only 6 years old. His mom sent him out for milk. Instead, he came back with 5,000 lira, which is about $8. He found the money by sneaking into the milkman's house while he was asleep. Even though his mom was mad and punished him, Leonardo knew that he had found his true calling as a thief. Back when he was in elementary school, he used to steal money from his teachers. Then, as a teenager, he started stealing cars and figuring out how to pick locks. By the time he was in his 20s, he was all about studying people. He would follow jewelry salesmen in Italy for weeks, just to see how they did things. In his 30s, he started putting together teams of thieves, each one with their own special skills. He had people who were experts at picking locks, others who were great at disarming alarms, and even some who could tunnel underground. There was even a guy who could climb up the sides of tall buildings like it was nothing. Each job required a different mix of thieves. Most of them, like Leonardo, lived in or near Turin, becoming known as the School of Turin. Leonardo's family has long been plagued by rumors of having mafia connections. These rumors reached an apex when his cousin Benedetto Capizzi was arrested by anti-mafia police who claimed he was about to become the new leader of the Sicilian mafia. Leonardo vehemently denies any mafia connections. Leonardo was known for his charm. He would pretend to be a friendly jeweler and be invited to different places to check out jewelry. He would buy a few gems, but then later on, he would steal all of the jewelry in the middle of the night. Antwerp was a great place for him to sell the stolen jewelry. He could take a stolen diamond necklace from Italy, break it apart, and sell the individual gems for money in Antwerp. He would visit the city about twice a month to stay in a small apartment near the diamond district, and then go back home to visit his family in the Alps. So as Leonardo sat in the cafe, one of his trusted buyers, a Jewish dealer, entered wanting to hire Leonardo for a big robbery. For an initial payment of 100,000 euros, all Leonardo had to figure out was if the vault in the Antwerp Diamond Center could be robbed. As Leonardo used the safe deposit boxes at this location for his own items, he was pretty sure there was no way to break into the vault. But for the amount of money he was given, he still did his homework. This is where the story starts sounding like a spy movie. In the Diamond District, photography is strictly limited. But no one noticed the camera Leonardo had. As he started scoping out the Diamond District, he had a pen poking out of his breast pocket. The pen looked normal at just a glance, but the cap had a miniaturized digital camera that could store up to 100 high-resolution images. First, he surveyed the police surveillance booth located on a street that led into the center of the district. Walking past, he took pictures of the booth with two officers monitoring the feed from the video cameras. After passing the police booth, Leonardo headed toward the Diamond Center, which had its own private security. The entrance was blocked by metal turnstiles, and visitors were questioned by the guards. Because Leonardo was a tenant, he simply had to flash his ID card to enter the building, and he took the elevator down two floors underground. A 3-ton steel door with 6 layers of security and a combination wheel with numbers from 0 to 99. A security measure with 100 million possible combinations could be seen on the far wall. 4 numbers had to be dialed to enter the vault, and the numbers could only be seen through a small lens on top of the wheel. Power tools wouldn't allow thieves to break in, as the vault door was rated to withstand 12 hours of nonstop drilling. But someone using these tools wouldn't even last 10 minutes before being caught because due to the embedded seismic alarm, the vibrations from the tools would easily set this alarm off. The door also contained metal plates that, when armed, formed a magnetic field. If the door were opened, it would break this magnetic field and trigger an alarm. To disarm the security measure, a foot-long key was required, as well as a code. The door was left open during business hours, with only a steel grate preventing access to its interior. Of course, no thief would try looting the vault with so many people around, as they would immediately be apprehended. Any attempt at stealing from this vault would have been done at night after the guards locked everything down and left the building. The vault was left unguarded during the night, as their technological defenses were virtually impenetrable. With his pen cam still in his breast pocket, Leonardo pressed the buzzer on the steel grate and was given access to the vault. The interior of the vault had thick concrete walls, and was equipped with motion, heat, and light detectors. A security camera not only transmitted the movements of the occupant to the guard station, but also recorded everything on videotape. The safe deposit boxes were made of steel and copper. They also required a key and a combination to open, with each box having 17,576 possible combinations. For any normal person, this place was secure. No one would get into this place. Even Leonardo knew this vault was an impenetrable target. 5 months after scouting the area and providing the photographs to the unnamed diamond dealer, he called Leonardo wanting to meet at an abandoned warehouse outside of Antwerp. Inside this building was a replica of the vault. Inside the fake vault stood three Italians, only known by their nicknames. The dealer claimed the genius specialized in alarm systems and could disable any type of alarm. A tall, muscular man was given the name The Monster because he was monstrously good at everything he did. He was an expert at lockpicking and was an electrician, mechanic, and driver with powerful physical strength. A quiet older man who looked like a grandfather was dubbed the King of Keys because he was one of the best key forgers in the world. He was tasked with duplicating the footlong key to disable the magnetic field security measures. Leonardo, with the help of the genius, would have to capture a picture of the key for him to accurately duplicate it. In September 2002, a video camera the size of a fingertip was hidden as a guard stepped up to the vault door and spun the combination wheel at 7 a.m. Each number was captured on this camera. When the guard finished entering the combination, the camera recorded the image of the footlong key. On February 13th, 2003, a police helicopter was seen looming over a convoy of police cars that were escorting an armored truck through Antwerp. The armored truck was carrying De Beers' monthly shipment of diamonds worth millions. De Beers is the world's largest diamond mining company, controlling 55% of the global diamond supply in 2003, and operating mines in areas such as South Africa, Namibia, and Botswana. The rough, unpolished gems were flown to London, where they were divided and placed into 120 boxes. Every month, Antwerp's share of the boxes was flown to Belgium, where they were transferred to an armored truck and brought to Antwerp. The next day, Leonardo visited the vault alone, carrying a can of hairspray. Stepping away from the safe deposit boxes, he pulled out the hairspray, covering the combined heat and motion sensor with it. The oily film would temporarily insulate the sensor from fluctuations in the room's temperature. But even with this film disabling the heat sensor, it was a temporary solution that would give the monster maybe 5 minutes to install the sensor bypass before his body heat set off the alarm. On Saturday night, many of the city's diamondaires were across the city watching the tennis match that featured Venus Williams, leaving the Diamond District deserted. A little past midnight, Leonardo pulled up to the curb where he, the monster, the genius, the King of Keys, and Speedy stepped out of the vehicle carrying large duffel bags, leaving Leonardo in the car. After the King of Keys picked the lock of a rundown office building, the team disappeared through the door. Through this building, the thieves walked out of the back into a private garden that bordered the back of the diamond center. This garden was one of the very few places in the district that was not under 24-hour video surveillance. Using a ladder, the genius climbed up to a small terrace on the second floor. The terrace had a heat-sensing infrared detector, but the genius slowly approached the sensor from behind a polyester shield. Once he reached the sensor, he placed the polyester in front of it, preventing it from sensing anything. While the rest of the team made their way onto the terrace, the genius disabled an alarm on the balcony's windows. One by one, the thieves climbed through the window and descended down to the vault 2 floors underground. They covered the security cameras with black plastic bags before turning on the lights. They successfully broke into the building without any alarms going off. To disarm the magnetic field around the door would be tricky, but the genius was a whiz with engineering. He simply redirected the magnetic field away from the vault door by using a custom-made slab of aluminum. The King of Keys would soon play out his role. However, the team did not need to use the duplicated footlong key, as the guard left the original just hanging in the utility room. While the genius dialed in the combination, the monster turned off the lights, so the light detector didn't sound an alarm once the vault door was opened. It was Speedy's job to stay in touch with Leonardo. So, after the vault door opened, he ran upstairs to call him because there wasn't cell phone reception in the vault. Leonardo waited in the car, monitoring his police scanner. Once the King of Keys picked the lock on the steel grate, the monster would enter the vault to bypass the heat sensors. The hairspray wouldn't last long, and the monster had to keep himself calm during this. After successfully bypassing the vault security systems, he covered the light sensor with tape. He was blinded in the darkness, but he had a lot of practice for this mission in the replica that was constructed in the abandoned warehouse. The thieves were cautious, blinding the heat motion detector with a styrofoam box, covering the light detector with tape, and then set to work on the treasures inside the vault. The King of Keys brought a hand-cranked drill, jamming it into one of the locks, working the drill until the lock broke. The men inside the vault memorized the layout from the replica and worked mostly in the dark, only turning on their flashlights for a split second at a time. By 5:30 a.m., the men had opened 109 boxes, their duffel bags overflowing with millions of American, European, Israeli, and Swiss currencies, gold bars, and rough and polished diamonds. While the gang wanted to keep going, they knew the streets would soon be filled with people. It took the team almost an hour to haul the bags up the stairs, past the infrared sensor, lower the loot down the ladder, and make it to Leonardo's vehicle. They placed the duffel bags in Leonardo's car and headed off on foot to his apartment. On Monday, February 17th, employees would realize the vault had been robbed. That very same day, August Van Camp was out hunting when he came across a pile of trash. In the trash, there was videotape strewn about, a wine bottle resting near a half-eaten salami sandwich. In white envelopes with Diamond Center Antwerp printed on them. When he returned home, he called the police to lodge a complaint about the litter in the woods. The officer seemed disinterested in Van Camp's complaint until he mentioned the Antwerp Diamond Center envelopes. By mid-afternoon, detectives swarmed the wood, gathering the garbage and collecting stray gems. Investigators reassembled a pile of torn paper, which turned out to be an invoice for a video surveillance system with Leonardo Notarbartolo linked to the purchase. Another investigator discovered a business card containing the address and phone number of Ilio Di Onorio, an Italian electronics expert tied to a series of robberies. Leonardo refused to identify any of his accomplices. But all evidence that authorities collected indicated that Ilio was the person referred to as the genius. The half-eaten salami sandwich was bagged as evidence as well. With detectives finding an antipasto italiano salami packaging nearby. 4 days after this, investigators had a search warrant for Leonardo's apartment, where they found a receipt from a local grocery store for this sandwich with a timestamp. The detective drove to the grocery store, checked the tapes, and found a tall, muscular Italian man purchasing the salami sandwich. The man most likely to be the monster, Ferdinando Finotto. Roughly 36 hours after completing the robbery, the five-man team met at a bar in Adro, Italy, where they agreed to meet the dealer. While here, they would give a third of the loot to the dealer, as he was the one who assembled the team and financed everything. The rest would be split amongst the thieves. The problem was that the men believed the haul would have been tens of millions of dollars, but the gang was set up. Most of the duffel bags came out empty somehow, when all of the men knew that all of the duffel bags were filled. Now they were looking at maybe $3 million per man. The whole team had a lot of questions for the dealer. The men stayed at the bar until closing, and the dealer never showed. Leonardo was already nervous about what Speedy had done in the forest and knew he had made a big mistake when he didn't return to burn the evidence they carelessly left behind. But the dealer not showing made him even more anxious. Thursday night, Leonardo ate dinner with his family at home. His biggest problem at that time was that he needed to go back to Belgium because the rental car was due in Antwerp the next day. According to him, it was always a plan of his to return to the Diamond Center. That way, if the authorities were looking for tenants who had disappeared, he wouldn't be on the list. It would also provide him with the opportunity to clean his apartment more thoroughly. He and his wife set off through the Swiss Alps early the next morning. While they were on their way to Belgium, authorities surrounded his home. Leonardo's 24-year-old son frantically called his father's cell phone as the police smashed the door open. He constantly called his father, who didn't answer because the ringer was turned off. Unbeknownst to the events happening at his home, Leonardo sped toward Belgium with his wife. Authorities expected the culprits to be anywhere in the world by that time. What they didn't expect was for their suspect to walk back into their clutches. Leonardo drove past the Diamond Center, waving at one of the guards. The guard knew authorities were investigating him and immediately called the police. As Leonardo spoke with the building manager, his wife and two friends cleaned out the apartment. Then authorities came, carting everyone and the things they cleared from the apartment with them. The bags Leonardo's wife and friends carried out with contained critical evidence, proving that he was in on the crime. They found numerous prepaid SIM cards, which were linked to cell phones, used almost exclusively to call three Italians, Ilio Dionario, Ferdinando Finotto, and Pietro Tavano, the person believed to go by the nickname Speedy. On the night of the heist, a cell tower in the Diamond District placed all four men in the area, with Tavano staying in constant contact with Leonardo. The same day Leonardo was arrested, Italian police broke open the safe at his home in Turin and discovered 17 polished diamonds attached to certificates that were traced back to the vault. Leonardo Notar Bartolo was found guilty of orchestrating the heist and sentenced to 10 years. While he was sentenced to 10 years, he was paroled in 2009. Belgian investigators persuaded French police to raid the home of Ferdinando's girlfriend, where they retrieved marked $100 bills, which authorities believe belonged to one of the Diamond Center victims. Ferdinando Finotto was arrested in Italy in November 2007 and given a 5-year sentence. Elio Dionario admitted to installing security cameras in Leonardo's office, but denied any involvement in the diamond heist. However, authorities found his DNA on some adhesive tape left in the vault. He was then extradited to Belgium in November 2007 to serve out his 5-year sentence. Pietro Tavano was also arrested in connection to the crime and served his 5-year sentence in Italy. While authorities know of a fifth thief's involvement from cell phone records and DNA traces, they have not been able to identify him. The King of Keys was never found or apprehended in connection to the heist. Authorities claim that the 5-man group stole approximately $100 million worth of loot, while Leonardo claims they only had about $20 million. He also stated the whole motive behind the heist was part of an insurance fraud scheme. However, the vault was uninsured because the insurance company knew of the security flaws and would not give it an insurance policy. Due to this, many doubt his claim that the heist was a part of insurance fraud. There are many theories about what actually happened with the loot and what the true motive for the heist was, but everything that was stolen has never been recovered. Leonardo refused to discuss what happened to the loot and stated it was something best discussed once he was out of prison. But he has been out of prison and I have not found anything stating he has discussed where the whereabouts are, and it seems that he has been lying pretty low since then. We can only speculate that he actually has the loot. This is not proven, it was just a speculation. So what do you think of today's case? Let me know your thoughts in the comments. Don't forget to like and subscribe for the newest episodes. Thank you for listening and your support. Stay safe, and I will see you for the next episode. Bye!